It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.
This series contains adult language and depictions of graphic violence. Listener discretion is advised. Let's talk a little bit about Norse mythology. Beyond what we know from the expanded Marvel Cinematic Universe with those feuding brothers, the gods of Asgard, Thor and Loki, and their father, the wise one-eyed Odin, ruler of Asgard. There are, like in all religions, many similarities between Norse mythology, which is basically an extension of Proto-Germanic folklore, and our modern Abrahamic religions. Mighty battles between warring supernatural beings, total destruction of the earth, followed by the repopulation of a perfect planet by two perfect beings, etc. The Norse cosmos consisted of 9 worlds, all flanking the sacred tree Yggdrasil. And if you think that's a weird name, you should see how it's spelled. There is a bad place called Hell, with 1 L at the bottom, underground, and Asgard at the top, where the gods live. Humanity lives in a realm called Midgard, kind of centrally located, and the other realms are populated by beings like dwarves and elves. Where you go when you die is a complex question in Norse mythology. You can end up in Hell, which isn't exactly an eternity of fiery torment, but it's also not preferred. If you're lucky, the Valkyries will fly you up to Asgard and into Odin's sacred hall called Valhalla. That's where you want to be. You could end up with the goddess Freya in her vast and beautiful country field, or if, say, you die at sea, the god Ran could call dibs. There are also some passages in the Nordic texts that cover reincarnation, but it's pretty murky. Odin's claim to fame, his massive sacrifice in favor of humanity, was his relentless pursuit of knowledge among the 9 realms. The ultimate knowledge that Odin wanted to gift humanity was understanding of the runic alphabet. To acquire this knowledge, Odin needed to hang himself upside down for 9 days and nights from Yggdrasil itself, the cosmological sacred tree. The runic alphabet was thusly translated, and the ancient northern European population had a writing system that could chronicle their rich history. And runic looks kind of familiar in a way. A quick glance makes it seem like a bunch of R's and T's, but obviously a closer inspection reveals a complex alphabet, but still similar to our present-day Arabic, Cyrillic, or Greek alphabets, to name a few. The specific rune, or letter as we might call it, but the specific rune associated with Odin is called Ansus, and it's supposed to represent his actual mouth, as well as the accepted magic that springs forth from it. That magic being humanity's ability to communicate. Whether it be ideas or histories, lessons or prayers, the Ansus rune is among the most sacred of the so-called Odinistic runes. There are 18 runes of Odin. Often you'll see them carved into small stones, straight lines crossing in specific patterns, each carrying a different meaning. Just like our alphabet, but rather than each rune representing a specific sound to be formed and spoken, the Norse runes represent something more akin to individual ideas. For example, the rune Fehu simply represents livestock, but it symbolizes wealth, abundance, success, security, and fertility. Or Kanaz, which represents a torch but symbolizes creativity, inspiration, and vitality. Many pagan religions utilized runes in various forms in a wide variety of ritualistic endeavors. Once having gained the knowledge of the runic alphabet, someone could easily recreate their shapes by simply drawing them in the dirt, or if a longer-lasting ritualistic display was required, runes could be fashioned out of sticks and used to adorn sacred sites or other ceremonial grounds. Over the centuries, the ancient Norse gods have gone the way of thousands of other gods before and since. They're now considered, quote, mythology, where they were once worshipped and believed in, just as fervently as Jesus and Allah are today. All that's left is a rich mythological history, cool movie characters, and a set of translations that were bound to be co-opted and turned into something awful by modern humans. And we didn't disappoint. Welcome back to The Devil Within. You're listening to Odin and the Delphi Murders. So, by the sheerest coincidence, that hundreds and hundreds of years ago, Northern Europeans, you know, living just below the Arctic Circle, yeah, those Northern Europeans were white people. Because of that, some individuals of highly questionable intelligence decided to adopt some Odinistic principles and combine them with, wait for it, white supremacy. Yep, the Odinic Rite is technically a Reconstructionist religious organization and calls itself a, quote, folksy heathen movement, complete with a ridiculous bent hook swastika as its symbol. Man, I really wish I was kidding, but here we are. The group spouts all the expected tropes about racial preservation and that nationality is biological and not geographical, whatever. The reason I bring all this up is that, incredibly, two tragic murders from 2017 are now connected to an Odinistic cult. No, more than that, these murders were allegedly committed by an Odinistic cult, and that, in fact, an innocent man is in jail and awaiting an imminent trial. The murders of best friends Abigail Williams and Liberty German paralyzed the small Indiana community of Delphi. With a population of over just 3,000 people, really everyone knew everyone in this tight-knit community, and the loss of even one of its citizens was deeply felt. But Abby and Libby were teenagers, just 13 and 14 respectively. Their senseless, brutal murder was simply too much for the town to handle. And the tragedy unfolded in an all-too-familiar way, and is every parent's nightmare. First, an older sibling dropped the girls off at a well-known hiking trail on an unseasonably warm day in February of 2017. They got out of the car around 1:30 and had agreed to meet Liberty's father at the same spot at 3:15. But the girls never showed up. And by 5:30, a missing persons report had been filed, and the family was searching the area around the Manan High Bridge Trail, a popular section of the Delphi Historic Trail Complex. The Manan High Bridge spans Deer Creek and has steep slopes on either side leading down to the water. This rather benign geographical feature would end up playing a significant part in the investigation. At noon the following day, Valentine's Day, February 14th, 2017, the bodies of Abigail Williams and Liberty German were found a half mile east of the Manan High Bridge on the north slope of Deer Creek. There were particular circumstances regarding the state of the girls' bodies that we'll discuss in a minute. Meanwhile, investigators began searching for clues as to who did this and why. The first and most important piece of evidence was the cell phone belonging to Libby German, who bravely risked her life in order to capture whatever evidence she could once she knew she and her best friend were in danger. She snapped a photo and was even able to record audio and video of the killer. The screen grab that she was able to capture showed a man in jeans and a blue jacket, wearing a hat, and it kind of looks like a face mask, and he's walking along the bridge with his head down and hands in his pockets. He was walking directly at the girls. And here's the audio.
Investigators today are speaking out about the unsolved double homicide in Delphi, and there are new startling developments. It turns out one of the victims took this picture of a suspect and captured his voice before she was murdered. Listen carefully to this brief audio recording. Do you recognize this voice? Police say that's the voice of a suspect saying three words, down the hill. We're going to play that audio again in a moment in hopes that you may recognize it and help solve this double homicide.
It's believed that the killer pulled a gun in order to scare the girls into compliance. He then ordered them, as we heard, down the hill and out of sight of any potential witnesses. And then the killer, allegedly, undertook some kind of ancient, Odinistic pagan ritual, or more simply, a human sacrifice. But wait. What? Let's back up a second and figure out how we got to the point where it's actually being considered that these slayings were sacrificial in nature. First of all, in the days immediately following the discovery of the girls' bodies, the police released that grainy picture of the man on the bridge found in Libby's phone. This man was originally a person of interest, wanted for questioning. Then a few days after that, this person was named as the prime suspect in the double homicide. The manner in which the girls were killed hasn't been released, although some of the details have been leaked. The public was urged to consider the photo and call in with any possible leads. In July of 2017, a composite sketch of the man on the bridge was circulated. This sketch was enhanced by eyewitness accounts of others who saw the man in different areas of the trails that day in February. But still, nothing panned out, and the case nearly went cold. Then, almost 2 years later, in April of 2019, law enforcement announced a new direction in the case and released a completely different composite sketch. This man was much younger looking than the man in the original sketch, and had short, curly hair as opposed to the longer, shaggier hairstyle of the man seen in the first drawing. Then, days later, another suspect, who was wanted for kidnapping and rape in a separate case, was also named a suspect in the Williams German murders. But, unbeknownst to police, he had taken his own life a few weeks earlier. The police seemed to be floundering in their investigation. They had a picture of the guy, his voice on a recording, multiple witnesses saw him in the area on the day, and they had one good piece of physical evidence. A bullet, unfired and in its casing. This bullet was found on the ground between the bodies of the two girls. They could have a fingerprint, maybe even DNA. At the very least, they could try to match the bullet to a specific gun or a different cache of ammunition. But no one was getting the full story. By design. Police played this very close to the vest, even holding back the fact that Libby had recorded a full 45 seconds of her encounter with the killer. They also didn't release the information about the bullet found at the scene. It would take almost 6 years, but law enforcement was eventually able to connect that bullet to a handgun registered to a man named Richard Allen. This man was arrested on October 26th, 2022. And this wasn't a surprise to the Delphi police. They had interviewed Allen in the days following the murders. He admitted to being on the trails around the time of the girls' disappearance, but insisted he had nothing to do with their deaths. But now they had him in jail, where he would stay while he awaited trial. And that's where the case gets really interesting.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Tonight at 5 o'clock, the attorneys for the suspect in the Delphi murders case want any confessions that he made, suppressed.
That's the request just made weeks before Richard Allen goes on trial for the murders of two young teens, Abby Williams and Libby German. Our 13 Investigate senior reporter Bob Siegel has been looking over these new documents that were filed today in just the last hour.
And Bob joins us live from the newsroom tonight. Bob?
Allen's attorneys say they want any statements made by Allen while he's been in prison. Well, he says they say that those statements were not made voluntarily and came while Allen was mentally ill. And they say for those reasons, allowing a jury to hear those confessions would violate his constitutional rights. Allen has been kept at a maximum security state prison for nearly 18 months since his arrest. And in a new court filing, his attorneys say Allen has been accused of making incriminating statements to both inmates and guards while he was at the Wabash Correctional Facility between March and June of last year. They claim prison officials posted inmates at Allen's cell door and required the inmates to keep logs of all of his actions and statements and behaviors. And they say some of those inmates actively asked Allen questions. The defense team says that essentially amounts to a sustained form of interrogation, one that lasted more than 5 months. And they argue it's a violation of Allen's constitutional rights because he did not have an attorney present when he made any incriminating statements. They also say while in prison, Allen suffered from a mental health disorder made worse by being placed in isolation. They argue Allen slipped into a state of psychosis, including delusional and paranoid and highly dysfunctional behavior. So the defense team claims Allen's statements and alleged confessions were not given voluntarily, but instead as a result of him being overcome by living in an isolation cell while on suicide watch. And they say any confessions were therefore coerced and not admissible at trial. Now, that trial is set to begin in 1 month. The state is expected to use Allen's jailhouse statements against him. The defense team says the things Allen allegedly said don't match up with evidence from the crime scene and therefore show the confessions can't be true. They're asking the judge to suppress the statements altogether. In the newsroom, I'm Bob Siegel, 13 News.
All right, Bob, thanks so much. We've been following this Delphi case for more than 7 years now. We'll keep following it for you as we get...
The state, however, contends that the people assigned to the outside of Allen's cell were suicide counselors, whose only job was to make sure that Allen didn't harm himself. They weren't there to interrogate him in any way. Therefore, any statements made by Allen, confessions or otherwise, were purely voluntary and didn't violate his rights in any way. Also, the state claims that Allen confessed to his wife and mother during two separate phone calls that were recorded, as all calls are, by prison officials. But it's these prison guards, as well as alleged procedural misconduct by police, that have become the topic of a potential motion before the judge to dismiss the entire case against Allen. And that motion involves evidence, some of it allegedly suppressed by police, that points to practitioners of Odinism having committed the murders, and that Allen is a patsy. When Delphi police finally released the probable cause document, their case seemed pretty cut and dry. They knew that Allen had been in the area during the time window for the murders, and he didn't deny it. A search of his home produced a weapon and ammunition that matched the bullet found at the scene. And by this time, they had Allen himself admitting to the crime. But then his defense team found an interview conducted by police with a Purdue University professor from just a few months after the killings. Apparently, police were concerned about the state of the crime scene, that it might reflect some type of ritualistic activity. So they decided to consult an expert from Purdue. When confronted about this interview, the cops were like, yeah, sure, we talked to him, and basically he told us, you know, nothing to see here. But a later interview with the same professor told a different story.
Tonight at 11, we're getting fresh insight into these latest developments that are coming in the Delphi murders case. Attorneys for Richard Allen, who's the man... Tonight at 11, we're getting fresh insight into these latest developments that are coming in the Delphi murders case. Attorneys for Richard Allen, who's the man charged with killing Abby Williams and Libby German back in 2017, tonight are saying they have evidence that investigators lied and tried to hide information. Our Emily Longnecker spent tonight poring over these new documents. taking them to a legal expert to help us break it down. Emily?
Well, Scott, Richard Allen's defense lawyers say Allen didn't kill Abby Williams and Libby German, but people practicing the pagan religion of Odinism did. And then investigators not only brushed aside crime scene evidence supporting that theory, but also tried to hide it.
At the end of the day, the prosecutor's role is to seek the truth and seek justice.
Defense attorney and former Marion County prosecutor Katie Jackson Lindsay has one word for claims from Richard Allen's defense lawyers that investigators withheld and hid evidence that could prove Allen's innocence.
The best word I can keep coming up with is disturbing.
Allen's attorneys claim police ignored crime scene evidence that the teens were killed in a ritualistic sacrifice after consulting a Purdue professor who told them there was no evidence to support that. In court documents filed today, Allen's attorneys say in a recent interview, that same professor contradicted what investigators told the defense just last month. According to the defense, the professor told investigators, quote, after viewing the pattern of sticks on the girls, that it was a given that someone was trying to replicate a Germanic rune script, possibly associated with Odinism. That analysis, say Allen's lawyers, was backed up by a Harvard expert. Allen's attorneys claim investigators knew the Purdue professor's name, but tried to hide it from their defense team, and also misled the Carroll County prosecutor by telling him they didn't know the professor's name or where to find him. All of it proof the defense claims that investigators misled a judge to get a search warrant for Richard Allen's home. Now a judge must consider more than 150 pages of court documents and decide if the information in them, including the theory the girls were killed as part of a ritual sacrifice, supports that request.
It's this judge's responsibility to say, is the omitted information egregious enough, significant enough, relevant enough that it is likely that it would have changed that judicial officer's decision. And that's a high burden for the defense to make.
So here's what's next. A judge will decide whether the defense has a credible argument and whether there needs to be a hearing to consider possibly throwing out evidence police collected from Allen's home.
Soon after that revelation, defense counsel filed a motion that detailed how they think the murders occurred, and that because of all the new evidence, the search warrant that allowed police to search Richard Allen's home should be thrown out, along with all the evidence it produced. Included in the defense filing were never-before-heard details of the crime scene, including that one of the girls was naked and the other girl was dressed in the naked girl's clothing. These facts were also cited in the filing as evidence that one man couldn't have committed these acts alone. It would have taken too long to fit into the established forensic timeline. And what about those jailhouse confessions? Well, that's where those prison guards come in.
The defense also claims that two prison guards supervising Allen at the Westville Correctional Facility are Odinists who have threatened, intimidated, and mentally abused him, including monitoring and recording attorney visits with Allen. The attorney suggests that Allen confessed to the killings in an April phone call to his wife from prison because he feared his wife would be harmed if he did not. Allen's attorneys continue to ask that their client be transferred to a county jail while he awaits trial. The court document summarizes, the defense is not inventing, fabricating, or exaggerating these facts, no matter how crazy those facts may appear.
So, a last word on those prison guards. They claim to have no connection to Odinism, but do admit to having worn patches on their uniforms that could be confused with what someone who does practice Odinism would wear. Huh? One of the guards also admitted that his religion is a form of Nordic pagan heathenry, which I'm pretty sure is another way of saying Odinism. The judge in this case has imposed a very strict gag order from day one, so information has been hard to come by. But the extent of the tragedy for the families involved and the community as a whole is impossible to calculate and may very well be limitless. And all this talk about ritual sacrifice, insane, ridiculous practices that rightly were condemned hundreds and hundreds of years ago, to think that there's even a possibility that disturbed people actually think there's a deity that wants them to kill children to either prove their fealty or gain some type of advantage on Earth is Well, it's obviously criminal, and more than that, it's inhuman. Chances are that all of this ritualistic talk is a Hail Mary from a wickedly creative defense team doing their best to serve their client. And hopefully, the evidence will bear out its ridiculousness and they can get back to focusing on the actual killer and putting him away forever. I'm sure that when the trial concludes, we'll hear about it, and I'll definitely have more to say then. Thanks for listening. Make sure you're following The Devil Within wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. You can also check out our socials at The Devil Within Pod on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Until next time, stay safe out there. The Devil Within is a Cloud 10 Media production, recorded live at Bel Air Studios in Los Angeles, California. Written and produced by Brandon Morgan. Executive produced by Sim Sarna. Our post-production supervisor is Bruce Witkin, who also provided original music for this episode. For The Devil Within, I'm your host, Brandon Morgan.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.